five of us in the chat room and everybody that podcasts the program. Thank you. Last week was the highest podcasted program since like February 22nd, wherever the hell it was. So thank you very much. And also subject to discussion as part of the antiradio.net podcast of programs that are independent. Thank you very much for antiradio.net for listening to the program. And also now a new one that's listening to the program is Meeker Broadcasting. So thank you very much. And tonight, after the news to me and the news to you, we'll bring back Justin Reddy of the 2008 political perspective.blogspot.com blog with a little more about the governor's races and things like that. And we'll talk to him about that. And then in the opening of the second hour, will be Michael J.W. Stickings of the Reaction blog, and also from John Edwards One America Committee blog. We'll you know, hash out the news and everything else that's going on. And then Koenig Rules will be on at the end of the program with a Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who news and review and also a discussion about his pop culture symposium, which he was at last week in Atlanta. So it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about the reaction. And I guarantee he's going to say somebody who was at that thing in a costume from the original series, or Mary Muffet was running around. So, and before we get to the news to me, I want to mention that Tom Cruise, the breaking news, Tom Cruise had a baby with Katie, what's her name, Katie Holmes, that a girl, 7 pounds, 7 ounces, her name is Suri, S-U-R-I. So I don't know if it was a quiet birth as they wanted, because it was the Scientology. Apparently, he wanted her to wear a plug in her mouth so she wouldn't make any noise. I don't know. And so it's the first child for Holmes, 27, and this is Tom Cruise's first biological child. Of course, he's got children from his adopted children from his marriage to Nicole Kidman, and also Brooke Shields gave birth as well. So it's a plethora of births, you know. I wonder what Pitt and Jolie are going to do to top this stuff here. And then also today we had in the USA Today, they had the Hamas defends a suicide bombing. They attacked Tel Aviv. They say the Tel Aviv attack is a result of Israel's brutal aggression. And also a bone drug cuts the risk of breast cancer. So this is good news. Study finds the drug is safer than tamoxifen. So that's always good news to hear. And then they had those two athletes were indicted in the Duke University rape case from the lacrosse team there. And on the side here, on the snapshots on USA Today, American Health, a 2000 survey found the percentage of people in these racial ethnic groups who were considered in fair or poor health. Native Americans, 17%, African Americans, 14%, Hispanics, 13%, and non-Hispanic whites at 8%. So that's interesting, very interesting. And what else? Also, they have the bit about the American Idol up on the top next to the USA Today logo about the time may have run out for Ace Young on American Idol, and their coaching panel says it's his options. Somebody suggests that he's going to go on some kind of OC or one of those WB shows, so who knows. And also today, yesterday in the news on Monday, the CBS News had a poll about how things are going in Iraq. Well, they said 41%, badly 58%, and a Gallup poll on Bush, 36% approve of Bush, and while 59% disapprove of King George. And also the GOP Congress, keep in mind, it's a GOP Congress and a GOP presidency, and also a GOP Supreme Court. GOP approval is 23%, disapprove is 70%. And a generic matchup, the Republicans got a 40% choosing from those polled, and the Democrats 55%. And then Sunday we had the Iraq unity talks have been set back. There are more problems going on with the setting up the unity government, so it's been pushed back again. And then four Marines died. Efforts to form a unity government suffered a new setback on Sunday when Iraqi leaders postponed a parliament session after failing to agree on a prime minister. What is the hell's the problem over there? Just pick somebody for crying out loud. Bombs targeted Shiites near a mosque and on a bus as attacks nationwide killed at least 35. And four more Marines were killed in fighting west of Baghdad, bringing to the U.S. death toll for this month already to 47 compared to 31 for all of March. And on Saturday, this is a little story didn't make the news in too many places. The Weather Channel crew has been charged with trespassing. This is from McMinnville, Tennessee. Three members of a video team for the Weather Channel have been charged with trespassing for allegedly refusing to leave the property of a woman who was killed by a tornado. Edward John Lozano Jr., Bradley Reynolds, and Jorma Brandon Duran were freed on $500 bail each after their arrests Wednesday. They allegedly were videotaping on the property of Sherry Bruce, who was killed when storm struck at the area on April 7th. There were 8 no trespassing signs posted on the property. Bruce's brother-in-law, Lynn Boren, wrote in warrants filed against the video team. They were asked at least 6 times over 30 minutes to leave. So there's your media right there. No insensitivity for the dead. And then Friday, ABC News Washington Post poll, generic matchup where we said this GOP Congress is 40%, Democrats 55%. And also there's a mumps breakout in the Midwest, 600-something cases of the mumps. Thursday, a tape from Al-Qaeda, tape of the month. So, you know, it's that time of the month. Another tape shows up. Al-Zawahiri surfaced. A tape from him urging resistance against the United States and Iraq. The tape appears to have been made in November. So, and Howard Dean was on the Situation Room saying how the Democrats are the party of change and they will pass real ethics reform in Congress. And like I said, I don't like him at all. We got to get rid of him, bring somebody else in there who doesn't stick his foot in his mouth every other day. That's my opinion. But LA Times, Bloomberg News poll, do you trust Bush to make the right decision with war on Iran? Yes, 42%. No, 54%. And then last Wednesday, Nixon aide John Dean was on Countdown saying that the Bush administration was edging closer to a point of no return in regards to credibility over Trailergate. That's another scandal brewing, and that if the Democrats gain control of one of the houses of Congress, it could make the last 2 years of his administration a living hell. Well, that's hopeful. I wish, you know, it can only be a living hell. We wish it was a living hell the last 2 years of his administration for him. And with that, move on to news to you, and this is from today. Bush, after some changes, vows more coming. Maybe he's going to resign. I don't think he's making those kind of changes. Maybe he's going to re-wallpaper the Oval Office. You know what I'm saying? Under pressure to revitalize his administration, President Bush reshuffled his economic team Tuesday with a new budget chief who was highly regarded on Capitol Hill and promised more changes were coming. He also named a new trade representative. Bush chose Rob Portman, a former 6-term GOP congressman from Ohio, to head the Office of Management and Budget, putting him at the heart of the White House decision-making. Hopefully he has more common sense than the rest of them in there have had the last 5-6 years. Bush tapped Portman's deputy, Susan Schwab, I wonder if she's related to Charles Schwab, to move up and replace her boss as the administration's top trade negotiator with other nations. So, and also during a Rose Garden ceremony, Bush made clear that the Rumsfeld's job was safe, despite calls for Rumsfeld's resignation from half a dozen retired military commanders. So, and then we also had this, last night, ex-Alaska General Senator Gravel runs for president. So the first candidate for 2008 to be announced is Senator Mike Gravel of Alaska, former senator. No limousines or motorcades for Mike Gravel. Short on campaign cash and barely known, the former Democratic senator from Alaska and his wife Whitney took public transportation Monday to a news conference announcing his long-shot bid for president. Gravel is a self-described maverick, and he established himself during two terms in the Senate as a critic of the Vietnam War and also of government secrecy. Sounds like he'd be a perfect fit, you know, with this Iraq and Iran. You know, Vietnam War kind of comparison, also the secrecy of this administration. You know, it makes Nixon look like he was a lily white. His campaign will use those themes and plan to give voters power to make laws. He wants to have a national initiative where the American people will vote on, like, wars. It says here he hitched his campaign to an effort that will give all policy decisions to the people through a direct vote, including health care reform, Social Security investments, and declarations of war. He wants American people to vote for the declarations of war and everything. The last time he held elective office, Jimmy Carter was in the White House. Saddam Hussein had invaded Iran, and Post-it notes made their debut. Nearly 3 decades later, Gravel entered the race focused on doing away with the representative democracy, the IRS, and income taxes. So we can only hope so. You know, good for him. He probably doesn't stand a chance. I probably stand a better chance than him to get elected president. But at least he brings some issues to the table. You know. Yeah, especially the comparisons with the Iraq and the Vietnam War and also the government secrecy. I mean, hello. It's like we're back in time. This is also from yesterday. Senate hearings on Bush now is from Carl Bernstein of the Nixon era. Worse than Watergate, high crimes and misdemeanors justifying the impeachment of King George, as increasing numbers of Democrats in Washington hope and increasing numbers of Republicans, including some of the president's top lieutenants, now fear. Leaders of both parties are acutely aware of the vehemence of anti-Bush sentiment in the country.
Democrats piss me off.
There you go. Oh, Republicans. There you go. Expressed especially in the increasing
Democrats piss me off.
Expressed in the increasing number of Americans, nearly 50% in some polls, who say they would favor impeachment if the president were proved to have deliberately lied to justify going to war in Iraq. Raising the worst than Watergate question, oh, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. How much evidence is there to justify such an action against Bush, a censure, or impeachment? Certainly enough to form a consensus around a national imperative to learn what this president and his vice president knew and when they knew it to determine.
Remember, there are no stupid questions, just stupid people.
Yeah, well, next question.
There you go. The stupid people are sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue right there. And let's see here. Let me see what the Bush administration has done under the guise of national security to find out who did what and whether legal or illegal, unconstitutional or merely under the wire. So we'll see how far that goes. But anyway, in many parallels between Watergate and New Hampshire phone jamming scandal, the internet is a breeding ground for political conspiracies, and there's a new one lighting up computer monitors across the country. Bloggers are fascinated by what they see as a eerie parallels between Watergate and a phone jamming scandal in New Hampshire. It has low-level Republican operatives involved in dirty campaign tricks. It has checks from donors with murky backgrounds. It also has telephone calls to the White House. It is unclear whether it is the work of a few rogue actors or something larger. This goes back, we talked about this last week. In 2002, there was a hard-fought Senate race between Gene Shaheen, the governor of New Hampshire, and John Sununu. On election day, Democratic workers arrived at 5 get out the vote offices to find their phones jammed. It turned out that the jamming was done by an Idaho telemarketing firm. It was paid for by a Virginia consulting group. The fee for jamming reported was $15,600 paid by New Hampshire Republicans. Oh, wow. And also the National Party is paying all the legal expenses of the New Hampshire people who are in trouble over this. So that's very interesting. And there's some I don't know how many calls were to trace back to the White House. So it's something's cooking. I don't know if Rove is involved. I mean, who else would be that? You know, probably Rove. Well, we'll find out. Allegedly, you know. It's all allegedly. And this is also from Monday. State Department memo. 16 words were false, they said. 11 days before President Bush's January 28, 2003 State of the Union address, in which he had said that the U.S. learned from British intelligence that Iraq had attempted to acquire uranium from Africa, an explosive claim to help pave the way to war, the State Department told the CIA that the uranium claims were based upon were forgeries, according to a newly declassified State Department memo. So, unbelievable. And so he knew that this was BS before he even got up there at Capitol Hill and made that remark. So, horrible, horrible. This was Clinton. They'd have him dragged out of that White House by horse and buggy and tarred and feathered, you know? January 12, 2003, the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research expressed concerns that the CIA that the documents pertaining to the Iraq-Niger deal were forgeories. The memo dated July 7, 2003 says. So, I mean, he had plenty of days. It's 16 days from when this came out before he gave a speech in January of 2003. So, and Gallup released a poll on Monday. 57% of Americans say the United States will not win in Iraq. Just 1 in 4 Americans believe the U.S. will win in Iraq, according to a new Gallup poll. The poll conducted April 7th to 9th showed clear majority stated that it was a mistake to send U.S. troops to Iraq, and the United States will not win and should withdraw at least some, if not all, of its troops. To these findings, USA Today Gallup poll conducted April 7th to the 9th, it shows that 57% of Americans think the United States will not win in Iraq. Another 39% says the United States will win in Iraq, divided equally between those who it will definitely and probably will win, blah, blah, blah. Only a third of Americans, 33%, prefer to keep the same number of troops in Iraq as there are now, including 8% who would actually increase the number, but 64% of Americans would prefer to withdraw troops, 36% say to withdraw troops some troops, while 28% want to withdraw all troops. So, That's what I said. Get those troops out of there, for crying out loud. Either bring them out to the borders to protect the borders from any of these Iranians or any of these, you know, idiots coming in, and then protect those oil fields and let the Iraqis slug it out in their civil war. I mean, that's common sense. You know, that's what we have to
do. Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
There we go. Well, maybe we could send them over to Iraq. I don't know. And AT&T forwards all internet traffic into NSA, says the EFF, which is the Electronic Freedom Foundation. The evidence that we are filing supports our claim that AT&T is diverting internet traffic into the hands of the NSA wholesale.
Spare me your sixth grade Michael Moore logic.
I wonder how much they're wholesale prices? I don't know. In violation of federal wiretapping laws and the Fourth Amendment, says...
You are a meathead.
There you go, says the Electronic Freedom Foundation staff attorney, Bankston. More than just threatening individuals' privacy, AT&T is their apparent choice to give the government secret, direct access to millions of ordinary Americans' internet communications is a threat to the Constitution itself. We are asking the court to put a stop to it right now. Absolutely.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Yeah, the EFF's evidence regarding AT&T's dragnet surveillance of its networks includes a declaration by Mark Klein, a retired AT&T telecommunications technician, and several internal AT&T documents. This evidence was bolstered and explained by the expert opinion of Scott Marcus, who was blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, this is unbelievable. So, now the NSA is watching all what we're doing on the internet. So, and also, Sunday, Blair canceled upcoming trip to U.S. to avoid being photographed with Bush. Tony Blair has canceled an upcoming trip to America to avoid being photographed with President Bush. The Prime Minister was scheduled to visit the U.S. this spring for meetings with the President, but the trip was called off after Blair decided that being photographed with Bush would be too toxic for his image. No kidding. This is also for Monday. U.S. knew Shiite militias were a threat, but took no action, largely because they were focused on Sunni insurgency. U.S. officials were warned for more than two years that Shiite Muslim militias were infiltrating Iraq's security forces and taking control of neighborhoods, but they failed to take action to counteract it, Iraqi and American officials said. Now American officials call the militias the primary security concern in Iraq. So now, first of all, they ignored them. Now all of a sudden they're a big concern now over there. Ridiculous. Blaming them for more civilian deaths than the Sunni Muslim-based insurgency and demanding that the Iraqi government move quickly to stern their influence. Well, it's our ignoring them that made them go up, increase their influence in the first place, you know. U.S. officials concede that they didn't act in part because they were focused on fighting the Sunni-dominated insurgencies and on recruiting and retraining Iraqi security forces. U.S. inaction gave the militias, with support from Iran, time to become a major force inside and outside the Iraqi government. Among the U.S. officials' missteps, White House and Pentagon officials ignored a stream of warnings from American intelligence agencies about the mounting danger posed by two Shiite militias, the Badr organization and the Mahdi army. The Badr organization is the armed wing of the Iranian-backed Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq, blah, blah, blah. And also, another misstep that we made, a group of high-ranking Iraqis appointed in 2004 to persuade militia leaders to disband their groups received no funding and was allowed to wither away. And also, we dropped the ball by our U.S. diplomats in Baghdad were slow to recognize the majority Shiite population's ascent to political power. And also, we failed by acting against the Shiite militias would have undercut the administration's argument that foreign terrorists and holdover from Saddam Hussein's regime were the problem in Iraq. And also would have raised doubts about the administration's reliance on training largely Shiite security forces to replace U.S. troops in Baghdad. So, there you go right there. More you know, botched programs in Iraq, you know? One screw-up after another over there. And this is from Friday. Marines suffered two dead, 22 wounded in Iraq. Two U.S. Marines were killed and 22 wounded, two of them critically in fighting in western Iraq. Speaking of Iraq, you know what I mean? I remember... There you go. When Saddam was still in power and all that yada yada was going on, they always said, oh, he's got body doubles and all this stuff. Where are these body doubles? You know what I mean? He's been in our custody for how many years now? Maybe they're dead? I don't know, Bob. But I remember that. I remember that during when we were rolling into Iraq, right? That's a civil war. But I remember, there's the Shiites. It's a bat over there. Okay. Live live audio of the Civil War in Iraq. But seriously, I mean, where are these body doubles of Saddam Hussein's? We never heard a word about these body doubles, if it's true. I remember on the Fox, on that came saying, oh, we don't know if that's the real Saddam or not. You know, they keep showing walking down the street. Where are these body doubles if that was true? I don't know. So anyway, had these Marines suffer 2 dead, 22 wounded. Horrible. U.S. casualties have begun to rise this month. We already talked about that. There we go. From Saturday, Tony Blair refuses to back Iran's strike. This is from the Scotsman. Tony Blair has told George Bush that Britain cannot offer military support to any strike in Iran, regardless of whether the move wins the backing of the international community, government sources claimed yesterday, which would be Friday. Amid decreasing tension of Iran's attempts to develop a military nuclear capacity, the Prime Minister has laid bare the limits of his support for President Bush, who is believed to be considering an assault on Iran, Foreign Office sources revealed. So, I don't know. Since we're supposed to be leaving Iraq, and Iraq is in charge of their own country, but this is amazing. U.S. building a massive embassy in Baghdad. The fortress-like compound rising beside the Tigris River here will be the largest of its kind in the world. The size of Vatican City. Wow. With the population of a small town, its own defense force, self-contained power and water, and a precarious perch at the heart of Iraq's turbulent future. The new U.S. embassy also seems as cloaked in secrecy as the mini-state in Rome. Please, burn the embassy in Iraq to the Vatican City. Amazing. We can't talk about it, security reasons, says Roberta Rossi, the spokeswoman for the current embassy. But a British tabloid even told readers that the location was being kept secret. News that would surprise people in Baghdad, who for months have watched the forest of construction cranes at work across
Next
the...
Next question.
From the winding Next Tigris question. River. But this is amazing. Look at this. The embassy complex, they have 21 buildings on 104 acres of land. Is taking shape in a riverside parkland in the fortified green zone. So we're going to have hotels there. Maybe they'll have like a theme park there or something. I don't know. I just saw some Florida. Senator Nelson is crushing Catherine Harris in the latest poll. This is that Badalak who cost Al Gore the election. Don't forget her. Representative Catherine Harris continues to struggle in her bid to unseat Senator Bill Nelson, former astronaut. According to a new Rasmussen Reports poll, Nelson currently leads Harris by astonishing 30 percentage points. These numbers have Nelson counting down the days until May 12th. The Florida filing deadline, which would ensure a Nelson-Harris matchup should no other candidates enter the race. Yeah, you can stick a fork in her. She's done. Well done. And the U.S. Marines on Friday offer a Babylon apology. It's from the British Broadcasting Company. A senior U.S. Marine officer said he is willing to apologize for the damage done by his troops to the ancient Iraqi site of Babylon. U.S. forces built a helicopter pad on the ancient ruins, unbelievable, on the ancient ruins and filled their sandbags with archaeological material in the months following the 2003 invasion. Colonel Coleman was chief of staff at Babylon when it was occupied by the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force. Babylon's Hanging Gardens were among the seven wonders of the world. I don't have to rest this right. It says Colonel Coleman told the BBC that if the Iraqis want an apology, for the destruction caused by his men, he was willing to give one. What about the destruction to that one of the seven wonders of the world? The 2,000 troops who were deployed there did immense damage as they set up camp amidst the ruins of the old temples. A helicopter pad was constructed at the site. The vibration from the landings led the roof of one building to collapse. The soldiers also filled their sandbags with archaeological artifacts just because they were lying around and easy to pick up. So here we are, our troops, you know, they're over there ripping off from this ancient, one of the seven wonders of the world. Terrible. This is from Friday. Britain took part in mock Iran invasion. Pentagon planned for Tehran conflict with war game involving UK troops. British officers took part in a U.S. war game aimed at preparing for a possible invasion of Iran, despite repeated claims by the Foreign Secretary Jack Straw that a military strike against Iran was inconceivable. The war game, codenamed Hotspur 2004, took place at the U.S. base at Fort Belvoir in Virginia in July 2004. So they're already ratcheting this up. You know, I think Bush wants to get this over before he leaves office, so he'll probably go in there, bomb them, or maybe
laughable, man.
Or or Israel will do it, and we'll give the Israel cover, you know, protect them if they get attacked or something's going to happen. Iraq's speeches have done little to buoy war support. Like a man on a treadmill, President Bush has gotten almost nowhere making speeches over the past 7 months to boost public support for the war in Iraq. Nobody believes a word he says anymore. He's finished. Since Bush began a round of Iraq speeches last fall, approval for his handling of Iraq has remained stuck, with about a third of the nation approving of what he's doing. Shortly before the speeches began in late September, 32% approved of Bush's handling of Iraq, according to the September 16th, 18th USA Today poll. The ratings, you know, went up back up to 39%, but now they're back down to 32%. Scott McClellan, analysts say there is little Bush can do except keep talking and hope things improve in Iraq. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan says the purpose of the speeches was never was to raise Bush's poll numbers. McClellan says the president believes it is important during this critical and unsettling period to update the American people about our strategy for victory. I don't know, is there one? What is it this week? The progress we are making and the difficulties and challenges that remain. Yeah, whatever. Data leaks persist from Afghan base. I saw this, I couldn't believe it. A computer drive sold at a bazaar in Afghanistan for $40. May hold names of spies for the United States to inform on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. This is from Bagram, our base in Afghanistan. A computer drive sold openly Wednesday at a bazaar outside the U.S. airbase. There holds what appears to be a trove of potentially sensitive American intelligence data, including names, photographs, and telephone numbers of Afghan spies informing on the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. The flash memory drive, which a teenager sold for $40, holds scores of military documents marked secret, including intelligence gathering methods and information, including escape routes into Pakistan, it's nice, and the location of a suspected safe house there, and a payment of $50 bounties for each Taliban or Al-Qaeda fighter apprehended based on the source's intelligence. Oh, just give them everything. Everything's on those flash drives. How'd they get them out of there, out of that base to begin with? Who knows, you know? From Thursday, Senator John McCain warns of rough going for the GIP. No kidding. Republican Senator John McCain reaching out to wary conservatives delivered some bad news to the party's core constituency on Thursday, warning that the midterm elections will be hard for the GOP. We Republicans are going to have a tough race in 2006 because the country is not happy with us. Not happy? We're pissed off at you. We have a 20% approval rating in Congress. The potential presidential candidate who skipped Iowa in his 2000 bid for White House campaigned for Republican blah, 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 blah. McCain, I don't think so. Because, you know, he's going to be older than Reagan was in his second term when McCain would take office for his first term. I don't know. Well, who knows? Can American people actually be that dumb? Maybe. I don't know. A blizzard of phone calls, emails, as generals push Rumsfeld to quit. A winding circle of retired generals who have stepped forward to call for Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld's resignation is shaping up as an unusual outcry that could pose a significant challenge to Rumsfeld's leadership, current and former generals told the New York Times on Thursday. This one general, Swanick, who led troops on the ground in Iraq as recently 2004, on Thursday, he became the fifth retired general in recent days to call publicly for Rumsfeld's ouster. So he's not going anywhere. I do not believe Secretary Rumsfeld is the right person to fight the war based on his absolute failures in managing the war against Saddam in Iraq. So, oh well. And Thursday, we also had government spending hits record in March. This is ridiculous. Government spending hit an all-time high for a single month in March, pushing the budget deficit up significantly from their red ink level of a year ago. In its month accounting of the government's books, the Treasury Department reported Wednesday that the federal spending totaled $250 billion last month, up 13.7% from March in 2005. So, like I said, keep spending this money. Spend it. Who cares, you know? Spend the money. And what else? Also from Wednesday, we had the report that Colin Powell says Bush took misleading Cheney advice, ignored State Department. So this is from Wednesday, and they said that on Monday, former Secretary of State Colin Powell told TruthDig.com that he and his department, he's in his department's top experts, never believed that Iraq posed an imminent nuclear threat.
I don't believe you.
Yeah. Who bought the dry? What's she saying now?
I don't believe you.
Too many gates for one prisoner. We got trailer gates. You have this gate, that gate. You got gates all over the place. There, you got trailer gate. Who bought the drive? NBC, I think, bought some of the drives that they were sold at that bazaar in Afghanistan. They're the ones I saw in something or somewhere. They're the ones that popped the disc in the computer and I saw it's all this top secret material that was on these flash drives. So. And getting back to this Colin Powell business, he said that he and his department's top experts never believed that Iraq posed an imminent nuclear threat, but that the president followed the misleading advice of Vice President Dick Cheney and the CIA in making the claim.
Don't be ridiculous.
Now Powell tells us this stuff. The harsh truth is that this president cherry-picked the intelligence data, no kidding, in making his case for invading Iraq and deliberately kept the public in the dark.
What the hell did you do?
Yeah. As to the countervailing analysis of the highest level of the intelligence community, while the president and his top cabinet officials were fear-mongering with stark images of a mushroom cloud over American cities, I remember that, and you remember Powell sitting with that little thing of anthrax, the leading experts on nuclear weaponry at the State Department, at the Department of Energy and the State Department thought the claim of a near-term Iraqi nuclear threat was absurd.
Just do what I tell you.
Terrible. The CIA was pushing the aluminum tube argument heavily, and Cheney went with that instead of what our guys wrote, Powell said.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself.
And the Niger reference in Bush's State of the Union speech, that was a big mistake, he said. It should never have been in the speech.
Give me a break.
He says he didn't need Wilson to tell me where that there wasn't a Niger connection. He didn't tell us. He didn't tell us anything we didn't already know. He never believed it, according to Colin Powell. So I believe he's really coming out swinging, huh?
I lied.
Powell said when he says here, when I was pressed further as to why the president played up the Iraqi nuclear threat, Powell said it wasn't the president; it was all Cheney. So unbelievable. So Powell, where's he been? Since he got out, he should have came out swinging as soon as he got out of there. Lies, damn lies, and George W. Bush is from the Capitol Hill Blue on Thursday by Doug Thompson. No doubt about it, George W. Bush is lying.
Don't be ridiculous.
I like it when they go off.
Lying, don't be ridiculous.
Lying, rotten, putrid.
One of us is in deep trouble.
Putrid, soulless destruction of a once great nation called America.
Shut up.
Is now open for all to see.
Fuck you.
Ooh.
Fuck you.
Bush is not just a liar. He's a serial liar who avoids truth at all costs.
That's funny.
Because facts don't support his perverted, twisted view of the world.
I'm not a pervert. I'm not a pervert.
Truth exposes his corrupt administration and lays bare his many crimes against the American people.
Doing my job.
There you go. And the Constitution of the United States. He goes on and says, impeachment? Nah, too good for this lowlife. arrest the SOB. He doesn't say yet. Yeah.
Fuck you, asshole.
Lead him from the White House in chains.
Go to hell.
Parade him down Pennsylvania Avenue and then lock him in stocks. What is this? Lock him in stocks on the Washington Mall so everyone can see what happens when anyone thinks they are above the law of the lamp.
Trust me.
That's as good as my wanting him to get caned, drop his pants and run down the strip and you pay $10 to get the cane, hit him once with the cane last week.
Come and get me.
That was pretty good. Arrest the SOB. Liam Royals in chains. it'd be terrible for the country to have, but the imagery would be wonderful. Retired generals step up pressure on Rumsfeld. Secretary of Defense hounded about leadership, handling of Iraq war. The Washington Post. The retired commander of key forces in Iraq called yesterday for Donald H. Rumsfeld to step down, joining several other top military commanders who have harshly criticized the Department of Defense's authoritarian style for making the military's job more difficult. I think we need a fresh start to the top of the Pentagon. There you go. There's the sound we like to hear. I think we need a fresh start at the top of the Pentagon. Retired Major General John Batiste, who commanded the 1st Infantry Division in Iraq in 2004 and 5, said in an interview, "We need leadership up there that respects the military as they expect the military to respect them. And that leadership needs to understand teamwork." Oh, yes, that's right.
One of us is in deep trouble.
There you go. I think, there's no...
What the hell did you do?
Bush should know there's no I in team, right? Batiste noted that many of his peers feel the same way. It speaks volumes that guys like me are speaking out from retirement about the leadership climate in the Department of Defense, he said earlier on CNN.
What the fuck
it's crazy. Batiste's comments resonate especially with the Army because it is widely that he was offered a promotion to a three-star rank and return to Iraq and be the number two U.S. military officer there, but declined because he no longer wished to serve under Rumsfeld. And also before going to Iraq, he worked at the highest level of the Pentagon, serving as the senior military assistant to Paul Wolfowitz. That's the clown that was stuck that comb in his mouth to wet his hair in that, what the hell is that movie, Fahrenheit 9/11.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself.
Now he's running the World Bank, you know? And this
is,
there you go. This is from Wednesday. Report raises new questions on Bush and weapons of mass destruction. I think Bush is the weapon of mass destruction. I don't know. He laid waste to the Treasury Department with the deficit spending and everything else. So maybe he should be looking in the mirror.
Son of a bitch.
There you go. The White House faced new questions Wednesday about President Bush's contention 3 years ago that weapons of mass destruction had been found in Iraq.
Well, I've got news for you. You are mine now. You belong to me.
The Washington Post reported that a Pentagon-sponsored team of experts determined in May 2003 that two small trailers were not used to make biological weapons. Yet 2 days after the team sent the team sent its findings to Washington in a classified report, Bush declared just the opposite. Oh yeah, who cares what the report says? Unless it's a coloring book, you'll never read a damn thing. You get too many words. He wants pictures. We have found the weapons. We have found the weapons of mass destruction, Bush said in an interview with Polish TV station. We found biological laboratories. Bush spokesman Scott McClellan said Wednesday that Bush was relying on information from the Central Intelligence Agency.
Just do what I tell you.
And the Defense Intelligence Agency. How many DIA, CIA? When he said that the trailers seized after the 2003 invasion were mobile biological, mobile biological laboratories. That information was later discredited by the Iraq Survey Group in its 2004 report. So, sad. McClellan said it was unclear whether officials at the White House were aware of the contradictory field report when Bush repeated the claim in a television interview. He said that the Bush of the intelligence community makes the assessment. The White House is not the intelligence gathering agency. Well, no. Well, now they are because they're listening on all of our calls and everything. So the trailers, along with aluminum tubes acquired by Iraq for what is believed to be a nuclear weapons program, were primary pieces of evidence offered by the Bush administration before the war to support its contention that Iraq was making weapons of mass destruction.
That's enough. That's enough.
Horrendous.
That's enough.
And incumbent Bolton may pick an outsider. Oh, we already went through that. Where is our guest here? I'm running out of... bastard! I
you
hate when people know
show. Son of a bitch.
That's right. That's
Stop
right.
Stop being such a pussy.
Trying to be nice and bring him back on. And this is the thanks I get.
What's the matter?
Yeah, the water's fine in the deep end of the pool. Come out of the shallow end. Come into the deep end. It's all right.
What the fuck did I do wrong?
Oh, here's this AT&T thing again. AT&T asked judge to order documents alleging wiretaps returned. So AT&T is asking for these documents to be returned to them. Attorneys for AT&T have asked a federal judge to order a San Francisco civil liberties group to return highly confidential documents that allegedly show that the telecommunications giant provided detailed records of millions of its customers to a government intelligence agency. This is ridiculous. The EFF filed a lawsuit against AT&T in January, alleging that AT&T had collaborated with the NSA in a massive and illegal program to wiretap and data mine Americans' communications. The documents reportedly provide evidence of the technology that AT&T had used to conduct surveillance.
You are one pathetic loser.
Yeah. The documents, Mark Klein, he's the one that's at the whistleblower. He provided a statement to Wired News that described how he had met an agent from the NSA in 2002. Klein said he was told that the agent had come to interview a management level technician for a special job. In January 2003, Klein said he learned from the technician who had been interviewed by the government agent was installing equipment in a secret room that was built next to the room. I wouldn't make it too secret then. Next to the room where the public's calls were routed. Months later, a client said he learned that signals were being diverted to the secret room, which contained a Naris STA-6400, a semantic traffic analyzer that can instantly sort through digital data, including email, internet phone calls, videos, and digital pictures. That's amazing. Amazing that all that's going on. And who's on tonight? I don't know. A big no-show from... And well, we'll just keep rolling along. If anyone wants to call in, we could hash out the politics of the day. It's 1-866-587-6257 if you're out of the Las Vegas area. Or local, it's 383-8120. We can hash out what's going on in the news with this politics business if anybody wants to call in. But it's ridiculous all this is going on. Yeah, I mean, it makes people look over their shoulders at everybody now. AT&T is handing, they're checking or going on the internet, and it's violating the Fourth Amendment. I mean, it's insane what's going on with all this BS. And then what else they have? Something breaking news here on the Yahoo here. Let me see. Bush and Schwarzenegger to meet. Oh, what's going on there? Schwarzenegger's not doing too well in his polling in California. What's he doing meeting with Bush? That's certainly going to sink him. This is from the Associated Press, that Bush and Schwarzenegger to meet. They found reason to avoid each other in recent months, but President Bush is scheduled to meet Friday afternoon with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Groper-in-Chief. Officials with both administrations have said. And won't be a long session, just enough time for the governor to press his fellow Republican on such vital California issues as the state's fragile levee system and immigration, aides in both camps said on Tuesday. Bush will pitch the American Competitiveness Initiative, blah, blah, which double government funding for basic research in physical sciences. Oh, yeah. He'll fund it. He'll sign the law, but he won't fund the damn thing. So, and what else? And so that's interesting. So Schwarzenegger is going to meet with Bush. So that's going to be, that's going to be breaking news or what? I'm not sure. And Bush was saying how all options are on the table with Iran. So apparently he's, putting everything on the table to invasion, economic sanctions. They say you got to get China, Russia, and the rest of those countries over there to lean on Iran to, ratchet down the talks and everything. And we have the presidential pardon since 1945. So this is interesting. At Harry S. Truman had 2,031 presidential pardons and sentence commutations by each administration. So he had 2,031. Eisenhower had 1,157 pardons and sentence commutations, and John F. Kennedy had 572. Nixon had 923. Ford, of course, had 404, including he pardoned Nixon. Carter had 563. They went down. And Reagan had 406. George Herbert Walker Bush had 77. Clinton went back up to 457. Wow. And then Bush so far has had 82 pardons and sentence commuting the sentences of these of criminals. So that's interesting, that going up and down. And yet Bush has yet to veto a single spending bill since he's been in office. So, and also they had we'll talk about the anonymity handicaps Hillary Clinton's challengers in New York. They don't stand a chance against her. They might still throw up Daffy Duck up against her because she's up like 30 percentage points in the polls. So she's running away there. So supposedly they're saying that she wants to really run up her vote totals to impress really ratchet it up, so it puts her in a good position for 08. So, we'll see about that. And then Senator rips on Exxon's CEO's retirement package. And I saw this. O'Reilly was talking about that today on his show, that he's not going to buy any more Exxon oil. Amid record oil prices and soaring gasoline costs, ExxonMobil's $400 million retirement package, $400 million, that's ridiculous. Well, the gas is like $3 a gallon. And we're paying for this retirement package. Exxon Mobil's $400 million retirement package to its former CEO is a shameful display of greed. It should be reviewed by Congress and investigated by federal regulators, Democratic Senator Brian Dorgan said on Tuesday. So he wants Exxon Mobil officials to appear at a Senate Commerce Committee hearing to explain how the corporation justifies giving its former boss, Lee Ramos, such a huge retirement package. No kidding. $400 million. And, of course, Bush is up there. He's saying that he said on Tuesday he was concerned about the impact high gasoline prices were having on families and businesses. Government's watching this, blah, blah, blah. He's not in care. How many times has the gas has gone up and down since he's been in office? You know, it's ridiculous. So we got the 23-cent state gas tax. The government's 18 cents. Won't they do away with the gasoline tax a little bit? They'll take a little heat out of the price of gas. You know, it's I think anyway, but it's just insane. You know, and what else? Police calls off. Oh, I didn't hear about this. Where is this story at? And what about that beating we had today? No, it was over the weekend at the MGM. They ran that footage on Fox about the security officer or some kind of employee at the MGM was beat up by a gang of kids, apparently. But 10 or 20 kids beat the daylights out of this poor guy who works at the MGM Grand here in Las Vegas. Apparently, he suffered a broken collarbone and also a broken jaw. And for no apparent reason, you know, that this gang swarmed on him and beat the daylights out of him. So, and this is a story for Monday. It says police closed off entries and exits at the Senate's Dirksen office building for several hours on Monday after setting off an alarm for the presence of nerve agents. Sergeant Kimberly Schneider, a Capitol Police spokeswoman, said an alarm went off at 4:50, indicating a suspicious substance near a basement post office facility. All clear was declared at 8:15 after tests proved negative. So, yeah, that's amazing. I didn't hear about that either. But what else we have going on here? Government. FBI wants access to dead writers' papers. Jack Anderson. They're going after whispering Jack Anderson's papers. Not long after Columbus Jack Anderson's funeral, FBI agents called his widow to say they wanted to search his papers. They were looking for confidential government information that he might have acquired in a half century of investigative reporting. The agents expressed interest in documents that would aid the government's case against two former lobbyists for the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, who have been charged with disclosing classified information, said Kevin Anderson, the columnist's son. So what are they doing digging through his paperwork for? The poor guy, he died at 83 after a career which he broke several big scandals and earned a place on President Nixon's enemies list. Authorities on several occasions tried to find out the source of leaked information that became a staple of his syndicated column. So, yeah, he was pretty famous. Let me just go through some of this news that Justin wanted to talk about. He wanted to talk about the top governor's race in the country this year. Of course, Schwarzenegger versus Steve Wesley. State controller or Phil Angelides, the state treasurer, basically going to be a referendum on Arnold and his reforms, very modest reforms. I hope Arnold Schwarzenegger goes down in flames because he never should have been elected to the first place. You know, your referendum on the incumbents is re-election time. No, this recall, you know, give me a break. And also you want to talk about the Maryland governor's race. Bob Ehrlich was the Republican versus Baltimore Mayor Martin O'Malley or Montgomery County Executive Doug Duncan in the Democrat primary. O'Malley, supposedly he's got good remarks as being the governor mayor of Baltimore. So what else we have here? And Michigan, Jennifer Granholm versus businessman Amway executive Dick DeVos. Versus him. A close race because of Michigan's negative economy due to GM layoffs and other issues. It's a bit of a surprise. Am I drinking? I think so. I'm drinking some beer. We should start drinking. I might make the show more fun. Pardon me when I burp. Sorry. Surprised that Granholm was not coasting to re-election. She was very popular for 2 years. In Pennsylvania, Ed Rendell versus former Pittsburgh Steelers star and ABC TV personality Lynn Swan. So he's running lots of star power, but ask me about the celebrity factor and how it works differently at the governor level. Well, we saw it work for Schwarzenegger, so I don't know if Swan can appeal to the voters in Pennsylvania. We'll see. Florida replacing Jeb Bush, who is still very popular. Attorney General Charlie Crist versus State CFO Tom Gallagher. Primary versus Jim Davis versus State Senator Rod Smith, a Democrat. So it says conservative Gallagher is neck and neck with Crist, who is more of the establishment candidate. Yeah, we'll see. Alabama, Bob Riley versus ex-state Supreme Court Justice Judge Roy Moore. I think he's the one that got the Ten Commandments taken out of his court versus Lieutenant Governor Lucy Baxley versus former Governor Don Siegelman. So, Alabama. Other interesting races, he said, Rick Perry, of course, the governor of Texas, versus former Congressman Bell versus Kinky Friedman, who's Imus keeps pushing him, versus state controller Carolyn Strayhorn. She's the independent. And she's also the mother of Scott McClellan, White House spokesperson. So let's see how she does. She was on Hardball a few weeks ago. She sounded pretty good. She sounded reminded me of what's her name? Richards, Ann Richards, the former governor of Texas. She's the one that said that George H.W. Bush was born with a silver foot in his mouth. So she's, this Carolyn Strayhorn sounds a little bit like her. Oregon, they had Ted Kulongowski versus several in the Democratic primary. Versus former state GOP chair, state senator Kevin Mannix, blah, blah, blah. Illinois, of course, Illinois had the big story with the former governor George Ryan getting convicted on all those charges of fraud or whatever the hell else he got convicted on. He was state secretary of state. So people have been whispering about him for years. I remember when I lived back there. Even then, because he was secretary of state for years. Back then, people were whispering about him. Oh, he's a crook and all this stuff. So, but he said he's going to fight it. And his sentence is pretty much be a life sentence because he's in his 70s now anyway. So, so he also had here Illinois and Ohio are also interesting races. Finally, those of us who are handicapping the 2008 presidential race will be watching the margin of victory for Governor Richardson of New Mexico. There you go. Bredesen in Tennessee and potential dark horses like Pawlenty in Minnesota, Sanford in South Carolina. If Huckabee can help shepherd Asa Hutchinson into the governor's mansion in Arkansas. So we'll see. And then Governor Napolitano in Arizona, who's a woman. So that was pretty interesting. Too bad he couldn't make it to talk about that stuff. This Iraq business and Bush and everything else, my God, I don't know what's going to happen. But the Democrats got to get their acts together. We can't just be anti. As I said, we got to have proposals. Like for me, I've said before, we got to have, we're disagreeing with Bush here. Well, this is what we do. This is Iraq, okay? Bush is screwed up in Iraq. Our proposal would be to pull the troops out to the border and protect those oil fields and let the Iraqis slug it out. Our resolution for whatever else is going on. Gas, the gas prices, you got to lean on these oil companies. What is going on? Open up the strategic reserve. You got to assume stuff like that. With a stroke of a pen, he can eliminate the federal gas tax. I do that. Lean on these states, perhaps, to cut their state gas taxes, because so many states in this country are now running budget surpluses. We got to do something with that. Social Security, do you have a means test on that? Do people who do not need Social Security would not receive their checks? That money would go back into the general fund. That's what I think. Do stuff like that. You got to reason with the American people. Give them ideas. You got to vote for. This year you're going to have a lot of anti. They're pissed off at Bush. Ah, that son of a bitch. You got to give them something to vote for. Democrats have a leg up. They got to get something. I'm voting for him to ask, why are you voting for him for? Oh, just because I hate Bush. Well, no. He's going to be representing you for 3 years, 4 years, 6 years, whatever the hell it is. Why are you going to vote for him? You got to understand why these people are him or her, what these people are standing for. And as I said, we got to have fairness in this world. This whole thing with the Easter egg roll in the White House was a disaster. Gay families were up there, and what'd they do? They gave them different times to go in or something. They gave them, some of the families, the straight families went in at 11 a.m., but the gays, their tickets said 12:30 in the afternoon. What is going on, for crying out loud? Like I said, do you want these kids raised forever in these orphanages or in these foster homes? We give them a loving family, for crying out loud, and half these problems going on in this country won't continue to happen. You got crime running loose. For these kids out here have no parental force on these kids. Their kids are left to the streets to raise them. Yeah, you have a family. It's you know, two women or two men. If they're loved and they can give them a good home, and give them good morals, and why not? You know, I mean, somewhere where social ills. You know, let's try this for crying out loud. So that's I think. And also we had this from three more plead guilty in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, to federal FEMA fraud charges. Let's see. Three more Louisiana residents pled guilty in federal court to violations related to Hurricane Katrina relief funds. United States Attorney David R. Dugas, Jamie Moore, 20, Reagan J. Benny, 25, and Eddie G. Cornley, 51, residents of Baton Rouge, each pled guilty to count one of indictments charging them with making false and fraudulent claims for disaster relief benefits. What in the world? As part of the plea agreement, the U.S. Attorney's Office will dismiss count two of the indictments. What the hell did they do? In September 2005, Alberto Gonzalez created a Hurricane Katrina Fraud Task Force designed to deter, investigate, and prosecute disaster-related federal crimes such as charity fraud, identity theft, procurement fraud, or an insurance fraud. It doesn't really say what they've done here, but... still interesting. And then, of course, the mayor's race in New Orleans is up right now, too. You have Van Agen up there running for re-election, and Hardball was there. I know it's important for New Orleans, but why did that mayor's race require national coverage of the debate? You know what I mean? I have no idea what purpose that that proved. None, from what I consider. But, and what else we have going on here? States admitting minorities' test scores... let's see. No Child Left Behind. Because of a loophole in the No Child Left Behind Act, one second grader's score in Tennessee counts more than others. That is because Laquanya is black and Victoria is white. The Associated Press computer analysis has found Laquanya is among nearly 2 million children whose scores aren't counted when it comes to meeting the law's requirement that schools track how students of different races perform on standardized tests. Oh, interesting. And the AP found that states are helping public schools escape potential penalties by skirting their requirements. And minorities who historically haven't fared as well as whites in testing make up the vast majority of students whose scores are excluded. The Education Department said that while it is pleased that nearly 25 million students nationwide are now being tested regularly under the law, it is concerned that the AP found so many students that aren't being counted by schools in the required racial categories. Sad. I mean, it's part of one of Bush's programs, you know? So, well, we'll take our break for the hour, and we'll be back, hopefully, with Michael J.W. Stickings of The Reaction to talk politics. And I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing my voice for the full hour. Con fell asleep. Maybe next week we have King Hesh's co-host. What do you think? I don't know. That's right, dudes, right? Oh, King Hesh. Sorry. This kid at work, he loves King Hesh. So anyway, we'll be back in the second hour. This is Subject to Discussion live on LVRocks.com. Thank you. We'll be right back.
When you're your pieces, brother.
It's a drag, it's a bore. It's swinging such a pity to be looking at the bar, not looking at the city.
What do you mean? You've seen one crowded, polluted, thinking town. Get tired, you're talking to a tourist whose every move's among the purest. I get my kids above the waistline, sunshine.
One night in Bangkok makes a heart man humble. Not much between despair and ecstasy. One night in Bangkok and the tough guys stumble. Can't be too careful with your company. I can feel the devil walking next to me.
I'm only watching the game, controlling it. I don't see you guys rating the kind of mate I'm contemplating. I'd let you watch, I would invite you, but the queens we use would not excite you. So you better go back to your bars, your temples, your massage parlors.
One night in Bangkok, the world's your oyster. The bars are temples, but the pearls ain't free.
Las Vegas, Nevada. You're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And we are back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And once again, it's Tuesday night in Las Vegas. It's Subject to Discussion time. Thanks for everybody listening live and everybody listening to the podcast. Thank you very much. And it's a part of antiradio.net. Thank you very much. And also Meeker Broadcasting. Thank you. And we'll be joined by Michael J.W. Stickings of the reaction.blogspot.com. Michael J.W. Stickings, are you there, sir?
I am. How are you?
I think of that powerful music you have now, huh? Oh, we didn't hear the music. Oh, here it is. We'll turn it up. You hear it?
No.
Oh, you can't hear the music?
No, maybe they don't let it in Canada.
Oh, maybe they don't let it in Canada.
I have no idea. I'm sure it was great, though.
Oh, so. you have to listen, catch up to it on the podcast, then. But yeah. Yeah, excellent music. Yes, nice patriotic music. So welcome back. It's been a few weeks.
Thank you. Yeah, it has.
How are you?
I'm not doing too badly. How are you?
Good. Well, I had I guess in the first hour no showed, so I had to wing it for the whole hour, but I'm fine.
I'm sure you can handle that.
Yes. So what's the big news right now in the state of the world?
Well, I mean, judging from the state of affairs at Memorandum, which tracks what's going on in the blogosphere, I suppose it's Rumsfeld. Mm. What concerns me about that is that the story is not Rumsfeld. The story is Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as bad a job as Rumsfeld has done, as much as I would like to see him leave, as much as I would like to see someone in this administration held accountable, you know, the story is not about Rumsfeld. The story is about how horribly this administration has mismanaged the war in Iraq. And what concerns me, I suppose, is that Rumsfeld is being scapegoated right now, maybe justifiably in some ways, But again, the story is not about one person. The story is about the administration. The story is about Bush. The story is about the war that they got America into.
Exactly. As I said, Rumsfeld is just the Secretary of Defense. You know, Bush had, you know, King George. He's the one that signed off on this war. He's the one that sent those, you know, poor troops to their deaths in Iraq. You know.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, Rumsfeld, again, certainly should be held accountable, mm-hmm. I think, for many of the abuses that have taken place under his watch, notably at Abu Ghraib. But Bush ultimately calls the shots.
Yes.
Rumsfeld is his man. And, you know, it's not as if Rumsfeld, this whole war was Rumsfeld's idea.
Absolutely, yeah. Actually,
you know, as E.J. Dionne wrote a column on this today in the Washington Post, that... Mm-hmm. You know, the problem with focusing on Rumsfeld, is what I was saying basically, is that it takes attention away from the administration, who are equally, if not more, responsible for this.
Yeah, Bush and Cheney.
Well, Dick Cheney, for example, or Wolfowitz, who's running the World Bank right now, mm. or all those neocons who have sort of, you know, melted into oblivion lately.
Yeah.
You know, and again, Bush himself. I mean, ultimately, that's where they, you know, I know it's a... I mean, it's such a cliche, but I mean, the buck has to stop somewhere, and it stops in the Oval Office. And I mean, to a certain degree, so what if Rumsfeld resigns?
Yeah. Well,
but they're still there.
Exactly. Well, you know, and this, I've been watching this phone jamming story kind of creep its way closer to the White House. Huh? You've been following that story. It's very interesting watching it finally. I think Countdown picked up on it. You know, it's just like there's, you know, calls for this New Hampshire phone jamming. You know, we're going to the White House. I mean, that's inching its way closer to Bush. You know.
Well, like everything else, every story seems to be inching its way closer to Bush these
days. Yeah, he's just surrounded with scandals. You know, the trailer gate, and what else? Iraq gate, intelligence gate. I mean, like you said, he came in. You know, oh, we're going to have the most moral, upstanding, restore integrity to the White House. You know, if that's integrity, bring back Clinton. You know.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I'd welcome that. Interestingly, something I just wrote about this evening, the Pulitzer Prizes were handed out. And what's interesting this year is that many of the winners are reporters, at least in the journalism categories, were given to reporters covering stories that are very close to the Bush administration. For example, reporters at the New York Times for the NSA wiretap scandal.
Uh-huh.
The Abramoff scandal, the Duke Cunningham scandal. No, those are not necessarily directly related to Bush, but they're certainly indicative of what's wrong in Washington right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also the secret prisons, CIA prisons around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that now Pulitzer picked up on this, but I mean all these stories just keep coming and coming and coming. And you know, we're going to see this more and more and more, especially with the Libby trial now underway.
Oh yes.
John Dickinson had a great column at Slate today, pointing out that Libby is, Libby is a great threat to the administration right now.
Oh yeah,
the only way he can fight Fitzgerald is to broaden the trial to include everything that surrounded Valerie Plame. Not just the leak itself, not just whether Libby was involved in that leak or what have you, but specifically the Bush administration's attempt to discredit dissidents, including Wilson. This could get very serious.
Yeah. Now, actually, I'm on your blog now, which is thereaction.blogspot.com. And then they have this by Creature wrote, it says, you have been used, quote from, let's see here, Bob Herbert from Time Selects, says, it's time for the American people to wise up. From the very beginning, the so-called war on terror was viewed by the Bush crowd as a magical smokescreen, a political gift from the gods that could be endlessly manipulated to justify all kinds of policies and behaviors. Absolutely. You know? And it says, at the end, the Creature writes, America, you have been used. America, you have been abused. It's been one long... Trailer Park Nightmare, with George Bush and his wife beater T having his way with you. You can deny all you want, but you soon must wake up. It's time to call the cops, get out of the trailer, and dump this guy. The world is waiting. Absolutely.
I'm glad you like that. I should mention that I have a couple of new contributors at The Reaction, and this one is Creature, who writes a great blog called State of the Day.
Ah.
And he posts for me occasionally. I also have a a really great writer, the liberal girl next door, who's done some great stuff for me, too. So, yeah, Creature seems to get it right, and I tend to agree with him on this.
Yeah, the visuals are incredible. It's like last week I was telling everybody that, these absurd things that the administration is saying, if we take it that way, how about instead of censuring Bush, we have him run down the strip here in Las Vegas with his pants down, we all get to cane him once, you know what I mean? Yeah, I mean, it's where these explanations are getting, and on. What's the thing now tonight? Today he said about the gas prices. Oh, the administration's looking into it. Oh yeah, because we're over $3 a gallon here, and they're always saying they're looking into it. They're going to have hearings and drag the oil executives up there, but nothing's going to happen.
Of course nothing's going to happen. I mean. Bush has a long history with the oil industry. So.
Yeah. And then, like I said, you're also a blogger over at the One America Committee blog with John Edwards thing. He's been showing up a little more and more the last week or so. He was on the Situation Room, and then somewhere else told me he was on. I'm like, really? He's starting to show up a little bit more. And I've been reading him more and more. I think he's starting to be more and more appealing as we get closer,
Well, I think I'm certainly not a spokesperson for the Edwards campaign, and I'm not privy to any insider information. But I think what's happening is that, Democrats are looking seriously at what possible candidates they do have. Mm-hmm. And there is a great deal of discontent with Hillary Clinton. Not necessarily with Hillary personally. I mean, I don't necessarily dislike her, and I'm sure I would support her. But the question comes down to, is she electable? And beyond her, it's not as if potential candidates like Mark Warner have really, fired the imagination. There has been talk recently of Gore. Apparently Gore is sort of revving up a possible campaign. But again, do Democrats want to go there? And I think you mentioned this, last time I was on, but I mean, Edwards has been vetted by the national press.
Exactly.
He's been through it. He knows what it takes. And his lack of foreign policy experience concerns me somewhat. But I mean, there are other realities in America right now, and one of them is the economy. Yeah. And a lot of middle America is struggling. And I'm not sure there's any other candidate out there who speaks to that problem the way Edwards does.
Yeah, I actually have a question from the chat room. Wow, what do you think of these bad poll numbers for Bush?
Surprisingly, I should mention, as bad as Bush's poll numbers are, they're actually not as low as Tony Blair's.
Oh, yeah.
Blair reports that Blair's popularity is about 30%, which makes Bush look good. Well, I mean, you never think Bush can go any lower. In a polarized climate like this, you always expect him to have at least 40%, but I think you've seen more and more moderates and independents jumping ship. Whether they're moving to the Democrats or not is another matter, but, I mean, clearly... There's great unease and unhappiness with Bush's performance to date.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how low it can go.
No. Well,
here's an indication. Something that really hasn't been picked up enough, I think, by the American press. The Sunday Times, the Times of London, not New York, reported on Sunday that the Bush administration is in plans for a major offensive in Baghdad to be conducted sometime before the midterm elections.
In Baghdad. Now, did we just step back in time? I thought we were liberated Baghdad.
Well, I thought so.
Yes.
Bush and Rumsfeld are obviously under a great deal of pressure to show the American people that they have some sort of control over what is happening in Iraq, that there is, in fact, not civil war. The Times is reporting that it will be a kind of carrot and stick neighborhood by neighborhood, house by house approach, led by Iraqi forces, but obviously backed up by American forces. Partly because Bush and the Republicans need a boost going into the midterms, and perhaps the only way Bush can salvage anything at this point, and that means his own popularity, his own legacy, but also a Republican Congress, is to have a successful military engagement in Baghdad. Now, the problem is, do we think this is realistic? I mean, think of what can go wrong.
Oh, how many?
This is where I'm thinking Bush's popularity ratings could potentially sink. lower.
Well, yeah, not only that, but how many troops are going to die in this attack? You know, now, are they playing like the shock and awe that we were promised, or you already said it's like an urban house to house type of a war?
It would presumably backed up by forces or units to support sort of water and sewage and electricity and essentially to try to rebuild Iraq again, neighborhood by neighborhood, house by house. I don't see how this is happening. I mean, there's our friends on the right deny that there is any sort of civil war going on in Iraq. But there was a report by Reuters today that in fact the sectarian violence in Iraq is getting worse. In Baghdad is getting worse.
Oh yeah, and in the
this isn't just a matter of sort of isolated gunfire, isolated violence. This is now full scale out in the streets. Sunni militias versus Shia militias. It isn't exactly clear to me. Now, I'm not a military planner, obviously, but it isn't exactly clear to me how Iraqi forces backed up by Americans could deal with that situation without huge loss of life.
Yeah, it's a mess. I mean, you think the American people, you know, the ones that don't pay attention to, they're too busy watching American Idol and all that. You know, you see the second war on Baghdad, and they think they'd step back. And go, what the hell? I thought we really did, bomb the hell out of Baghdad. Why are we bombing it again for? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but this is the same administration that is considering using nuclear weapons against Iran. So I suppose we shouldn't be surprised when it plans to launch a full-scale offensive in Baghdad either. At this point, I don't know about you, but I've sort of been beaten down by reality. Every time I think it can't get worse, it gets worse. And, you know, never underestimate these characters because you don't know what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, he's going to do this to hopefully bolster his approval, and then the sectarian violence. I mean, hello, it's a civil war. And actually, I had a story earlier. I was reading that how that the U.S. knew that Shiite militias were a threat, but took no action, largely because they were focused on the Sunni insurgency. Basically, we let them loose, we let them go, and then basically, it's our own missteps that caused the Sunnis to or Shiite militias to get so strong.
Oh, sure. I mean, it's extremely unlikely that anything the U.S. did or anything the Allies did after that quick offensive in Iraq, after the shock and awe campaign and the quick invasion into Baghdad, it's likely that it seems impossible that an insurgency could have been avoided.
Yeah.
But clearly there was very little planning for this kind of insurgency, and I guess this takes us back to Rumsfeld and why Rumsfeld probably deserves a great deal of the blame for this. You know, a complete failure to plan for the post-war situation to envision. I mean, it's not as if planners weren't aware of this, right? It's not as if experts on Iraq hadn't thought of this. It's that the civilian leadership in the White House and the Pentagon completely dismissed it.
Yeah, yeah.
And unfortunately, we're every day when you read the news, you know, 10 more people killed, 30 more people killed, 50 more people killed. And again, if there's an offensive in Baghdad, are we talking about thousands and thousands killed? Mm-hmm. We're paying the price for these missteps early on.
Yeah, it's horrible. And then what's the other thing I had here about I read that story in the Vanity Fair by Carl Bernstein. He wants hearings on Bush now, on the Senate hearings.
Well, I mean, Carl Bernstein can say that.
Yeah.
But it's a little unrealistic. I mean, there won't be Senate hearings right now.
Well, it's interesting how more and more of these articles are showing up. I mean, the Harper's had a huge story about, you know, censuring him or impeaching him. And, like every week there's a couple stories, you know, they pounding the drum slowly. You know, but, I mean, the only thing we stand is if the Democrats get the House and then they could call some hearings, you know?
Well, that's what a lot of it depends on. You know, we can talk as much as we want about these scandals, and I think you and I are coming from the same place on many of them. But nothing is going to happen in Washington unless the Democrats take back Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And there is hope that they will do so, obviously, but they have a lot going against them as well. I mean, you know, the House has been gerrymandered to the point where it would be extremely difficult for Democrats to win back enough seats to take it back outright. Although I suppose it's not impossible given the current situation. I mean, if there's a if Democrats are this far ahead in the polls, and you know, several weeks ago I quoted something like 12 or 14 points ahead of Republicans in House races, it's possible that Democrats could take it. But if they don't, you know, what will we have? You know, two more years of stonewalling until Bush finally leaves, and then what?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, will we ever know? You know. Yeah.
Well, I find it interesting how some of these states. I can see how last year when it was Kerry Bush, he had a lot of these gay marriage initiatives on the ballots, and a lot of that to say Roe was behind that to ratchet up the get all the Bible thumpers to come out in droves and vote and everything to drive up the vote, you know, the vote totals. And they say now this time around is going to be they're going to take I forgot what state that was that passed the they banned abortion. Anyway, more states.
South Dakota.
There you go. Yeah, more states. Yeah. More states are going to ratchet that up, and hopefully they're going to use that to get the conservative Bible thumpers out in droves to vote for the Republicans.
Well, again, I mean, I think there may be a couple of things going on here. The first one is that Bush has tied his legacy to Iraq and the 2004 midterms. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things he seems to be paying attention to, according to reports. And that's why I think he's willing to pursue anything, any last-ditch effort, in order to turn Iraq around, even if that seems crazy to say at this point. And I guess he thinks that turning Iraq around, or at least in the short term, if some kind of sweep through Baghdad produced civil order, that Republicans would do well. But I think Republicans are smarter than that right now, and the Republicans around the country are running away from Bush. They don't really want to be tied to him at all. But then the question is, what do they run on exactly? You know, I mean, they could run on tax cuts, but how can they run on tax cuts with such an enormous deficit? Mm. What do Republicans have exactly? I mean, national security has always been the Republican issue, especially in the age of the war on terror. National security is their issue. But considering how badly the war on terror has been mismanaged by Bush, where else do they turn? I think that's why immigration could be a huge fight, abortion could be a huge fight, flag burning could be a huge fight.
True.
All of these sort of wedge issues that we thought, well, they're not coming back anytime soon. They might come back. Same-sex marriage could come back.
Yeah, yeah. All that could be on those some of those ballots in some of those states. You know,
another issue that Roe has been exploring, as far as I know, is adoption by same-sex couples. You know, and again, to us that may seem, well, of course they should. Of course same-sex couples mm-hmm. should be able to adopt. Mm-hmm. But in order to get out the base, in order to get the religious vote, these are the issues that seem to stimulate them. And again, where else do Republicans turn right now? They don't really have much.
No. All they can hope to do is wrap themselves around. Well, either that, they could trot out 9/11. That's always good for something, isn't it?
Yeah, they could trot out 9/11. And again, I think they'll trot out terrorism and the threat thereof. And I'm sure that we'll see certain things happen in the days and weeks leading up to the midterms. Mm-hmm. But it's not clear to me why anyone would vote Republican at this point, given how badly they've performed. You know, unless, of course, they can play off the culture of fear, not just the fear of terrorism, but the fear that the country is being taken over by a bunch of homosexual abortionists who burn flags and let Latinos into the country, you know?
True, yeah.
I mean, unless they can play on that kind of fear, those kind of stereotypes, again, I'm just not sure how they rally enough support to beat back the Democrats this time.
Now we think of the Mike Gravel, Senator of Alaska, announced he's running for president. You know, he doesn't stand a chance. But I mean, interesting. I saw him on Hannity Combs last night. He's very interesting. You know, he's odd proposals about everything should be voted by a national initiative. They'll never fly. But reading back at his history is very interesting. He was kind of in the middle of that, you know, anti-Vietnam War business, and also with the Nixon Watergate business. So he was right in the middle of all that.
Well, I mean, one of the interesting things to follow this, not so much this year, but perhaps going into 2008, is what will happen to the Ross Perot vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that's something we don't talk about much anymore, but I think it was Peter Beinart had a piece on this in the New Republic, or one of the other New Republic writers. I mean, the Perot people are still huge. I mean, they may not be organized, but they're still a huge voting bloc of sort of populists, independents, nationalists, xenophobes, who sort of occupy this middle ground, probably more comfortable with Republicans, now perhaps less so. Where exactly do they turn? And there may be room in 2008 for some kind of independent or quasi-independent populist candidate to emerge as an alternative. Now, this may not happen. This may not happen as a major force like Perot, but it could happen within the parties themselves, right?
Interesting.
I mean, McCain sort of plays to that vote to a certain degree, although he's pro-immigration. Mm-hmm. But he's running more and more as a Republican loyalist, as a party hardliner. Mm-hmm. So the question is, will there be a populist Republican revolt against the establishment? Mm-hmm. Republicans who are simply fed up with the Republican Party but are unwilling to side with the Democrats. You know, similarly, who could lead a populist challenge from the left? Mm-hmm. Clearly not Hillary. She's more of an establishment type. It's sort of interesting, and I think, you know, think of it that way. There's such widespread disillusionment around the country right now, and it's directed not just at the White House. It's directed at Congress as well.
True. Well, you have, Russ Feingold kind of fills the bill on the Democratic side with the anti-war, you know, and all that. And
he does. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I think Feingold's a potentially a powerhouse candidate in 08. Yeah, I mean, he's certainly... He certainly made a name for himself the past few months.
And actually, you know, the interview I saw with Edwards was on, I don't know which one, I think it was on Situation Room. He admitted that his, you know, vote for support of the war was a mistake. So even he's starting to stake out some ground as an anti-war, populist, because he's, you know, anti-poverty and all that. So he's speaking towards, you know, the populist view. We don't want anybody to starve. How can so many millions of people in the United States starve when we're the richest country on the face of the earth? You know, that's always kind of a question mark. Well,
no, you know, that's true too, and certainly his Two Americas platform. I mean, he has a wonderful stump speech.
Yes,
if we can think back a couple of years. I mean, wonderful stump speech. Still has resonance, right? I mean, you know, even in an age of terror, there are still, you know, millions of Americans living below the poverty line, or millions of Americans with no hope, no opportunity. And I think Edwards is certainly someone who speaks to that constituency.
Yeah.
The only question, again, is whether or not he will overcome his lack of actual foreign policy experience.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he can compensate for that, like Hillary. You know, he could put Wesley Clark on the ticket, or you know, somebody else, you know, an air general, or how about what's his name, Zinni, you know, somebody like that.
Yeah. Any of those generals. Yeah.
And
just run the six generals together.
Well, no, I mean, somebody of that stature that can bolster any kind of questions you'd have about Edwards is look at Bush. I mean, you know, look at what Bush has done. You know, certainly. You know, Edwards looks like an elder statesman compared to Bush, you know?
Yeah. You know? No, you're right. I mean, I think, again, I certainly don't mean to dismiss Edwards. I think he's an extremely good candidate, mm-hmm. and I don't just say that because I blog at his mm-hmm. blog, but I think he is an extremely good candidate, and I think he's certainly someone to be, you know, someone to be considered seriously going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, anything coming up in, you know, you got like a minute left, anything coming up on your blog in the morning or later tonight?
You know, possibly. I posted three or four new things tonight, and again, I think because the blogging schedule has gotten so hectic, I've brought on some new contributors who bring their different perspectives in. You know, Creature is a solid liberal who comes from New York, and Liberal Girl Next Door is out in Seattle, and I have a couple of others who contribute. I've also had some guest bloggers on recently, a couple who come from more centrist sites than mine, just to bring in different perspectives, so... There's always something new to read, and hopefully your listeners will find something enticing there.
Well, absolutely. I hit your blog every day, and also check out what you're doing over at the One America Committee blog. So it's outstanding work. Excellent.
Yeah, I should mention I have something new of mine on liberalism was posted at the One America Committee. I think it was today. You can go over and have a look, and I should have something there next week, perhaps on global warming.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, we thank you for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, have a great night.
You too. Thank you. And
bye-bye.
That was Michael J.W. Stickings of TheReaction.blogspot.com and also from the John Edwards One America Committee blog. Excellent writer and excellent guest. Covered a lot of range there. We thank him very much for being on the program. And interesting. I said we got to... you know, get our acts together as a country and get rid of these rats that are currently in Washington, you know, this GOP Congress and all these other crooks that are in there. You know, we got to clean these people out, you know, vote out all the scoundrels, I'm saying, cry out loud, time to wake up this country, you know, time for the people to roar a little bit, you know. You can't stand for all this corruption and all this BS going on. The war is a mess in Iraq. You know, we got to, you know, knock them for a loop, you know, show them that we mean business, you know, sweep out the GOP and send in the Democrats, you know. And as I said, we want the Democrats to get one House of Congress. That's what I want, one. I don't want the whole damn thing, because you see what the GOP has done. The Democrats are going to do the same thing, where they have all houses of power, all the levers of power in this government. No, no, we don't want that. We saw what the Democrats did and ran the House for 40 years. We want to go back to that. Give them the House. That way they can fight it out. And they can have compromise between the Republicans and the Democrats and the House and the Senate and the President. They could check the President. That's how we need to check them and stop them from getting away with all this BS that's going on. That's how we're going to have to do it. So before we bring Koenig on, we'll have this little update. Of course, we had the breaking news that Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes had the baby girl named Suri. We already broke that. And then we had the USA Network is going to have a pro video gaming league. The top-rated basic cable channel USA Network is set to bring a professional video gaming to a broader audience later this year under a deal with Major League Gaming. Who knew there was such a thing? Which builds itself as the largest sanctioning body for professional gaming. The NBC Universal-owned outlet will showcase the league's entire pro circuit. A single and team competitions will take place in seven U.S. cities, starting Friday in New York and ending with the national championships in November in Las Vegas. Oh, I could just imagine what hotel they're going to have those at. And USA will begin airing the action in seven one-hour specials at season's end. The MLG show is set for Saturday, 10 a.m. slot, following the wrestling show WWE AM Raw, starting in November. And also we had the prime time ratings. We had the Fox, for the week of April 10th through the 16th, the top 10 shows, their networks and viewerships. American Idol, again, was number one on Tuesday. CSI was number two. American Idol Wednesday was number three. House was number four. It's a pretty good show. Desperate Housewives was fifth. Without a Trace was sixth. CSI Miami lost. Survivor and Deal or No Deal was round up the top 10. And also they had the ratings for the New Earth season premiere of Doctor Who. The overnight ratings for the new season in the UK for Doctor Who did an average of 8 million viewers watched the episode and an average of 38.6 percent audience share. So they did.
Is there 8
damn
million people
well.
In England?
I didn't think there were that many. I didn't think that many had TVs over there. But they did damn well. So hopefully we'll get the second season over here. It sounded like it was a pretty good episode, too. Turned out to get too many of the spoilers, but it was a series top rated program on BBC. Some show named Casualty placed second with 7 million viewers and blah, blah, blah. So it's doing real well. And also, we do have the ratings from last week's Dalek episode. Dalek did a 1.17 household rating, which slipped from the lowest rated original Doctor Who broadcast of the season to date. So, of course, it was a holiday weekend, which could explain the sun dropping viewers. Plus, the weather is nicer out. So with that, we'll bring on Mr. Koenig Rules. Exiting the TARDIS is Mr. Koenig Rules.
Yes.
There you go. Welcome. How was the TARDIS brought you back from Atlanta? How was that?
It was intense, man.
We had
anywhere from 15 to 30 people per panel.
Wow. That was just 20 minutes ago. You jumped back too soon. We just talked to you 20 minutes ago. Or it's been 20 months ago, and I'm still sitting here. So how was that? Koenig, for those of you who don't know, who don't listen every week, which is shame on you, he was at a pop culture symposium in Atlanta, right?
Yes.
Were you at the CNN Center? Or no?
CNN? We were at the Marriott.
Ah, okay. And how did it go?
It went fine. We had about nine panels.
Wow.
And we even showed in one panel, Lay Down Your Burdens, Part 2.
Well, how'd that go? How was the reaction?
Oh, I mean, these guys are just wonderful Battlestar Galactica fans.
Did anybody show up in costume? That's the big question.
No.
No? Nobody show up as an old Cylon?
They weren't in costume.
Really?
They were, how should I put this, sort of professional, I mean.
Ah.
I mean, they made cracks every now and then, but
so
it was good.
Really?
And got some people to hopefully write chapters for the book. So.
Very good. Yes, you're working on you're working on two books, aren't you?
Just one for now.
One for now.
I was thinking of doing a Doctor Who one, but I'm not sure what the rating.
Well,
whether a publisher wouldn't think that'd be the death kiss at this point.
Well,
know?
I don't know. I think because it's the Doctor Who's airing in the middle of reruns, and the Battlestar ratings fall through the floor when the reruns are on. I mean,
I know.
So 1.1's not bad. I mean,
I know.
So,
I
but
know. It's okay. It's doing, I think, like what John Doe is doing at 6 o'clock. Before the Stargate. Maybe who isn't on iPod?
I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I just think maybe people don't know about it, or they don't know what it's about, or they think it's like Battlestar that you have to understand a lot of it. I don't think it's just caught on yet.
Well, I think people hear it's been on for 40 years. They get like, oh my god, you can't catch up with 40 years of history, but they really don't. Dwell too much on the history of that show. Well, the Cybermen showed up, in the museum last week.
Yes, they did, and they'll show up for Rio in season 2.
Actually, we've been mispronouncing them. It's the Dalek, Dalek,
Dalek.
Yeah, like Dalek. And then
I was saying they kind of look like. Wasn't there a robot in?
Like somebody said, looks like a salt and pepper shaker.
That's right.
With the plunger on
robot,
the end of it.
Wasn't there a robot in Lost in Space?
Yeah, it looks like
that, right?
Yeah, Danger Will Robinson. Yeah, it kind of looked like that. Yeah,
sort of.
But that one looks like a pepper grinder. But this one looks like it's an actual pepper shaker.
You know the origin of the Daleks, don't you?
No, unfortunately, no. I'm not that up on the Doctor Who history.
Okay, well, Terry Nation is the creator of the Daleks, and he was saying on an interview that he was sitting downstairs in. The kitchen, and he was waiting for his wife to serve him breakfast, and he was looking at salt and pepper shakers, and she was saying, she was yelling to him, "Do you want some toast with those eggs?" And he put the two together, his wife's voice, and the salt and pepper shaker, and that's how he developed.
Well, we got a whole breakfast thing. We got salt and pepper shaker.
Yeah.
We got the toasters.
Yeah,
you got the hottie toddy standing there in the blonde with the blonde hair. She looks good last week.
What's gonna
Billy Piper Rose?
Oh, Billy Piper looks good every week. Oh,
you think the ratings are bad now? What if they lose Billy Piper and? Because I like this guy.
Yeah.
Lose him. I saw the new guy.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Dorky. Yeah, but I don't know.
he's got to look goofy like this new guy.
Well,
you like the leather jacket. I know.
Yeah. Well, I like how the TARDIS shows up in this warehouse in Utah, no less.
That's right.
In 2012.
And then they
discover it's the museum and all that, and all the troops come out, the guards come out. And then Bad Wolf made its appearance on the helicopter. Did you catch that? In the helicopter of the, what's his name? Van Erp? What was that? And Van Erp, Van Epp or something. What's his name? Van Stratton. When he shows up, the Bad Wolf, Bad Wolf 1 or whatever it is, that's the helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
And what else? He sees the Cyberman in the case. He says it's an old enemy and yada, yada.
And the Slavine and the Clawless Slavine.
Yeah, it's a Clawless Slavine. Yeah, that was there. So that was interesting because we just saw the Slavine in the end of the world.
Yes,
because that was the Slavine, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And what else? I like that whole chase scene when they're running down that corridor in the garage and the lowering the door on the hallway there to block them in.
Right.
That was a powerful scene there when she says she didn't make it and don't blame yourself,
right.
Doctor.
And the Daleks have a new ability. They hover.
Yeah.
Before they could be stopped by stairs.
Yeah. Now
but now they hover.
Yeah. Elevate, and then she brings the damn thing to life by touching
right.
the Dalek, and
yep.
And then all hell breaks loose, and it plugs into the power in the computer, right, and re-energizes. I thought it was incredible. The thing came back to life, and then they show the whole torture scene. See that they do a little. Copy of Abu Ghraib there to do a little political commentary because we're torturing the poor Dalek, you know? You hear it
yep,
shrieking.
It reminded me of Battlestar where they're torturing yeah. the poor Cylons, you know?
Yeah. And they,
you know, it's sort of like that nothing's black and white anymore. The doctor just wants to kill him, so he appears more the monster. And you see the little Dalek at the end with the eye.
Oh, the little
know?
Creature.
Who yeah. wants to feel the sunlight.
Yeah.
Oh, you know?
You felt sorry for the poor thing. And how?
Yeah, didn't you?
I thought that scene where the doctor went into the sea, the Dalek, and then he didn't know what it was. All of a sudden, he tries to run for his life, and he realizes it's a Dalek, you know?
Right,
and,
right.
All in all, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, especially the music was pretty good, especially with her running down that hallway there trying to get
the... Oh, yeah, with that tank top, yep.
Yeah, she looked hot. And what else? What else happened in that?
Well, he talks about the Time Lords and this I guess the sacrifice he had to make
yeah.
to destroy the Daleks. But if he can be wrong about the Daleks, he might be wrong about the Time Lords.
Uh-oh. Yeah, he said all their ships were destroyed and the Time Lords, like he did it. He killed
yeah.
all the Time Lords are gone as well. So
yep.
You know, and then the Joe Montana showed up. Did you see Joe Montana on Doctor Who?
Joe Montana.
Yes, the football great Joe Montana. Because all those actors and that were the Stratton was American. Somebody else was American. Joe Montana was the guard. It was saying we know how to take out a old tin buckets alien.
That was him.
Joe Montana.
Yes, wow.
It was. I was on Gallifrey 1.
No,
and
it wasn't.
I was on Gallifrey 1, and they
That's
said...
cheating.
They said it was Joe
that
Montana.
That was not Joe Montana.
They said it was Joe Montana. Yeah.
The Where's Jerry Rice? Right, huh? Catching a pass.
They said it was Joe Montana and Doctor Who. But they said it was him. I, who am I to argue? But anybody else can agree that it was Joe Montana playing the army guy. He gets electrocuted when the Dalek blasts lets the water come down and blasts
yep.
them with the laser, and they all get electrocuted. Yeah, I thought that was a great scene too.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and he's trying to say, "Where will I go, the Dalek? I'm all alone." And he kind of makes the connection with the Doctor because the Doctor's all alone as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, an actor named Joe Montana. Oh,
yeah,
how many?
Who's correcting you? Is that
Invincor was.
He always corrects people.
Well,
damn him!
You think there's an actor named Joe Montana? It's not the real Joe Montana. We gotta find this out. It was an actor or the football player? Not that Joe Montana. It's a different one. Wait, Joe Montana's gonna be. But I was kind of hoping it would have been the real Joe Montana. That'd be kind of a little trivia.
Bad.
You know, and what? And then the. The doctor thought the Rose was killed by the Dalek,
right.
And then he says, "Yeah, I killed her once. I'm not going to do it again." And he lets her out. That was a good scene too. Mm-hmm. And he says, and then the Dalek says that the doctor loves her. You know.
Yes.
So
he should know. You know, he senses emotion.
Yeah, and then at the end when it opens, has the Dalek ever opened up the machine?
Yeah.
Machines ever been opened up?
Yeah, they had a Dalek open up. In the Five Doctors special.
Ah.
So they've had the Daleks revealed before. I think maybe even in the first Doctor, they had an episode where they showed him as a slithering mass or something. But I don't think they ever showed him quite like that, you know,
oh, yeah.
With the eye.
Yeah, it looked like an octopus or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they look differently than they did on Friday?
Yeah, they've evolved. I mean, they've changed their look, and even the salt and pepper shaker look, it looks a lot more sophisticated with these Daleks than
yeah.
the old ones.
And then it says it wants to feel the sunlight and all that, and it wanted Rose to give the order to exterminate.
Yep, exterminate.
Yeah. But now we haven't seen the last of the Daleks, right?
No, we haven't.
Really?
And in a plot very... reminiscent of the new Battlestar, we're going to see, at least with the Daleks, we're going to see them in the cliffhanger. Well, sort of a cliffhanger.
Really?
Yep. We're going to see more than one.
Uh-oh, yeah. They come for Rose or what? Do they come for her?
Oh, they come for everyone.
Uh-oh.
It's a two-parter, and it's great.
Really?
It is fantastic with the special effects.
Well, it's a cliffhanger. It's when the doctor regenerates,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So that'd be interesting. Excuse me. And now, do you have any? Well, everybody's asking for any Battlestar. You shouldn't have any because you've been away all week. But
I did have something that I didn't say previously, and that is there's some suicide bombers, human suicide bombers in New Caprica, and what there's this one new character called Duck.
Duck?
Duck, like in whack, whack.
Oh, you're kidding. What's Duck?
And he blows himself up, plus a lot of other people, too. So, yeah. And that, I think, is either in the first or the second episode.
Really?
So they're planning a lot of resistance fighting against the Cylons in the first couple episodes.
Really? Actually, Greg Coupon is saying it about Joe Montana. Apparently, he's saying there's 1,000 Joe Montanas or 1,000 Daleks are going to show up in the season cliffhanger of Doctor Who. I don't know.
There are a lot of Daleks. Uh-oh. There's a huge fleet of Daleks coming. Yep.
Really? So they
Oh yeah. It's awesome. You know.
Really?
It really is.
Now get back to Duck. So Duck's leading these suicide bombers against the Cylons. Is that what he's doing?
Yes. Yes. See, one of the things came up at the conference. It's really interesting when the enemy commits acts, suicide bombings. It's called terrorism. When the humans do suicide bombings, it's called resistance fighting.
Ah.
But, I mean, you know, the effect is they blow. I mean, that was a common Cylon tactic, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In the first season of Galactica, Cylons were coming on board and blowing themselves up all the time.
True. Oh, yeah.
You know?
What's his name? He blew himself up. Remember, Adama saw him and he tried to go for him. Who was the name of that character? Remember, he was walking around when the show began. Oh, this is the old Battlestar and relics, and Ty walks by. Remember that opening scenes when Starbuck's jogging around the ship? Yeah,
yes,
he was in that one.
I forget his name. It's not Leoben.
Something else.
The other one.
Ebner, or Greg Coupon saying, and Ebner saying it, Duck's not new. He's been around before. He's a pilot.
Oh, okay.
Greg Coupon saying he was in
Scar. I don't
Scar.
Remember him.
Yeah,
do you remember Duck?
No, I remember Duck. I think I ate Duck for lunch last week.
Do you remember Duck with Grey Poupon?
Duck all orange. But he was also
something
else.
Hey, they had a Doctor Who panel at the convention, too.
Really? Really? Now, how'd that go over?
It went great. They had one presenter that covered all of the Doctors and showed the regeneration sequence in the last episode, and she said this is going to really be a spoiler for a lot of people, and people said show it.
Really?
We don't care. And so they showed the entire regeneration sequence.
Wow.
It was great.
Well, now supposedly it's a botched regeneration, right? He doesn't regenerate all the way or something. Is that right?
No, he regenerates all the way.
Oh, really? Because they said it's like botched. It takes a while for it to take effect or something.
Oh,
I don't know.
Well, that might be true, but the way he goes about regenerating certainly goes back to that aspect where the Dalek says that he loves Rose. So we're gonna see something really interesting there.
And actually, they're saying that Duck was in Scar and FOTP. What is that one? That's, I can't remember those initials now, whatever that, an episode. And he was in Captain Tan. Duck.
Oh, okay.
Duck. And actually,
what hand of the captain?
Where else here? Oh, Aaron Doral. Doral was the one.
Doral
was
the
suicide bomber that Adama almost caught.
By the way, here's something that some of you may not know. But Leoben, the actor who plays Leoben, was in Smallville this week.
Oh, really? Who's he playing?
He played, they had this telekinetic kid and couldn't control her power, and then she meets up with her dad, who has the stronger type of power, and he turned out to be a bad guy that Clark Kent had to subdue. But yeah, Leoben was in it, looking as mean and as fierce as he did when he was a Cylon.
Really? So. And actually, Lil Buck is saying that Duck was one of the ones that was banging on the hatch when Lee and Dee were locked in the bunk room.
Yeah, I think he was quacking, wasn't he?
Ah. Oh, Flight of the Phoenix. That's right. Yeah, Flight FOTP means Flight of the Phoenix. He was in that one.
Or Flight of the Goose.
Yeah. So, and actually, Craig Coupon's asking any spoilers on Kara Thrace.
Oh well, you read that interview, didn't you? Where she's going to have even shorter hair.
Yes.
And when she comes back to the Galactica, I guess she's a changed woman, and she's going to have. That hairstyle that Porter had, in the last movie, what was V for Vendetta?
Oh, you're kidding? She's me like
almost
it's shaved
gonna be,
bald.
It's going to be really short.
You're kidding?
Yeah, I mean,
oh my god!
And she's going to have another love interest too.
Uh oh.
Which means if she's going to have another love interest,
what's his name's going to make it?
That's what happens to Anders.
I think I'm going to be the love interest for Kara Thrace. Sorry, I'm going up to Vancouver to film my scenes next week.
It's going to have to be a real slut.
We'd have to take 20 takes to get our love scenes down. I want my scenes perfect, you know? But, well, that's interesting. Your hair's going to be really short like Natalie Portman's, huh? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's like I said maybe it's going to be like G.I. Jane, so it's going to be close to G.I. Jane's hair.
Mm-hmm. Well, she did have very short hair in... I think the series and the mini series, mm-hmm. because people were showing some clips from that, and I fear, oh my god!
Yeah, her hair's grown quite a bit.
Really looked different, and then she let her hair grow out, and then of course at the end a new cap. Oh god!
Yeah, well they say Lil Buck is saying, Ebner is saying Katie is pissed that they're gonna make her hair real short.
Yep.
So
yep.
Well, I mean it's for the series. I mean it's just part of her appeal is that blonde hair of hers. You know what I mean? It's too bad. Yeah, it's going to make it cut real short. Wow. So Anders must be going to bite the dust before they get back to the ship.
Yeah, he didn't look so hot at the end of the cliff. Dude.
No, maybe he's going to die saving her or something, some kind of a disastrous finale there.
Or maybe Duck blows him up,
Maybe the Daleks are going to show up and blast him. But now, any word? Now, getting back to your symposium. Now, the fans, do they have anything? How's the series going in the second season? Is it dwindling or is it still good? I mean, what's the general consensus of the people there?
I think what people and I sent you something email wise. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of questions that they feel need to be answered in season three. And I guess all of it boils down to we're hearing the plot from the aspect of the Cylons, like Brother Cavell, who says, I don't believe in a god. So he's an atheist type mm-hmm. of Cylon. And for a lot of people, that posed a lot of difficulties because they thought, oh, every Cylon believes in the Cylon god. Now all of a sudden Cavell doesn't believe in a god, so they're thinking... Should we trust the Cylons just because they say that, I don't believe in a god? Does that mean then that you have to believe in the Cylons? So there was that question. Plus, a real one that hasn't been talked about too much on the boards when Six kills three.
Oh.
Remember in Downloaded? I mean, a Cylon killing another Cylon.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, shouldn't this be a big deal? Though someone indicated that three would come back or be downloaded in 36 hours. So I wasn't sure if the resurrection ship was still around at the time that six supposedly killed her. But still, they compared it to like a Cain and Abel, sister against sister.
Oh.
And that was a big thing. But they want to be sure they want to know, is it going to be seen as a big thing or is it going to be covered up, hushed up, so they want to see some of these threads continue, like Brother Cavell's atheism, Six's killing of three. I mean, they really want some, are there, in other words, are there only 12 copies?
Yeah.
Because they, because the Cylons have said that
to
the humans. And the most interesting thing of all is with Baltar, because we kept playing back the theme song over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And it looks like Baltar's place gets completely leveled, and Six apparently shields Baltar. But how could Baltar have survived that blast?
Yeah, nuclear blast by standing.
And, and so some people are speculating, well, maybe she downloaded his memory in some way, or maybe they're fused together, or maybe he's a 13th model. We really don't know, you know, what's going on with that Cylon structure.
Well, he could be this Model 1, you know?
Yeah, some people really think that, even though Moore has said that, and Moore has said, I think, a couple times that Baltar isn't a Cylon. He's not, of course, going to admit it.
No.
That's one of the major things. And a lot of people think he's a Cylon.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns out to be the Cylon god. If
It
would be nice if they get Dirk Benedict to turn around in a chair and say, hello, I'm a Cylon. Like they planned with the cigar and everything. Hello, I'm God.
Yeah, hello, I'm God.
Yeah, I mean, if they can't get Benedict, who else can they get? Maybe Lauren Tweez could come on and play the Cylon God. Yeah, too bad John Colicos passed away.
John Colicos, Lauren Green, Jonathan Harris, who supplied the voice of Lucifer.
Yeah.
So it's really just the younger ones, well, the younger at the time, Hatch, Benedict, Herb Jefferson Jr., Loretta Spang, all those are still alive, and though they would like to do something, my understanding again is Glenn Larson only has the rights for a Pegasus movie, not even a Galactica movie. It's a Pegasus movie. Well, period.
Yeah, nobody. Who? Yeah.
And who would want to do a Pegasus movie after you saw what the Pegasus here series?
Yeah.
So,
and then there's always been question about the Pegasus got wiped out when the Count Ibley, that ship that always crash landed on that planet, it's always been rumored to have been the Pegasus.
Yeah.
And we never did get the unedited version of that episode.
I know.
Supposedly it's supposed to, on a web it's supposed to show, but I imagine it was going to show, it was the Pegasus that was crashed on that planet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or who knows? Maybe what's his name will show up as the Silent God, Patrick McNee. He's still around.
He's in bad health. I was checking on the sites with Patrick McNee, and he's in pretty poor health now.
Or maybe Noah Hathaway, as the chat room saying, could be the Cylon God, the old what's his name, Voxy.
But really, I think the people at the conference really want more to explore the Cylon order. They're sort of confused by a lot of things that. Haven't yet to be explained, and they feel that now it's season 3, and probably some things need to be explained, probably other things need to be questioned, or other questions will come up, but at least some things need to be explained.
Yeah, well, Koenig, I hear the TARDIS coming for you.
Okay.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
You take care.
Thank you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.